Welcome to Outbeat Now on KRCB FM Santa Rosa. Outbeat Now is part of Outbeat Radio, which is a weekly program produced by, for, and about the LGBTQI community in Sonoma County. You can hear Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m. right here on KRCB, or anytime by going to our website at www.outbeatradio.org. On our website, you'll find archive broadcasts, information about our hosting team, and ways to contact us. My name is Jeff Basham, and I'm in studio tonight with my co-host, Greg Moralia. Harvey Milk Day is May 22nd. We're honoring Harvey and the creation of Harvey Milk Day tonight. We'll have news clips from that era, and as Harvey would certainly have it, an inspirational speech or two. Earlier this month, Greg visited the GLBT History Museum in San Francisco and sat down at Harvey Milk's kitchen table with Paul Bonneberg, the executive director of the GLBT Historical Society, and we'll be sharing portions of that outstanding interview a little bit later in the show. Tonight on our Outbeat Youth segment, Greg will be talking with Mark Snyder from Collage, an organization that provides support to children of LGBT parents, and with Brad Usselman, one of three gay high school athletes who started a national blog for other gay high school athletes. All that and much, much more tonight on Outbeat Now. But first, here's this week's Outbeat Radio News. Take it away, Greg.
Good evening. This is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio News for Sunday, April 24th, 2011. Darren Ravi, who posted a video of Tyler Clemente in an intimate encounter with another man before Clemente jumped to his death off the George Washington Bridge, has been indicted on 15 counts by a New Jersey prosecutor, including invasion of privacy and bias intimidation. Ravi, 19, was Clemente's roommate at New Jersey's Rutgers University. Ravi is accused of spying on Clemente through a hidden web camera. He allegedly taped Clemente and another man in September and then posted it online. Clemente ended his life on September 21st. The indictment against Daron Ravi includes four bias intimidation charges, two of them second-degree charges that can bring up to 10 years in state prison each. Other charges include tampering with evidence, attempted invasion of privacy, hindering apprehension, and witness tampering. And here in California, the Los Angeles Lakers and their captain, Kobe Bryant, recorded a video message to fans denouncing bullying and defamatory language at the Staples Center. Here's ABC News in L.A.
The Los Angeles Lakers have released a public service announcement calling for understanding, compassion, and acceptance. The new PSA follows a recent game in which Kobe Bryant was caught on camera using a gay slur.
There are all kinds of different people in the world. That's what makes the world special. So whether someone is different than you
in race, ethnicity,
political beliefs,
religion, or sexual orientation, words can be hurtful. Replace them with understanding, compassion, acceptance. Let's make this a better world for all of us, because we're all in this together.
Kobe Bryant was fined $100,000 by the NBA for using the slur. The Lakers and the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation have announced they plan to work together to eliminate anti-gay bias.
And here in Sonoma County, the organizers of this year's Sonoma County Pride, the Russian River Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, announced the lineup of the festival's entertainment. Russian River Sisters Scarlett Billows, who is chairing the organizational committee, said the Pride Festival will provide a wonderful assortment of experiences and activities that uniquely represent the abundance of Sonoma County. True to the theme of Gay Syrah Syrah, that's S-E-R-A and S-Y-R-A-H, celebrants will be able to enjoy amazing entertainment and unique food and beverages from celebrated chefs and vintners. Pippi Lovestocking will act as mistress of ceremonies for this year's festivities. Pippi is a co-founder of the long-running San Francisco institution Tranny Shack and a veteran performer of TV and stand-up comedy. Onstage entertainment at the Pride Festival showcase a wide variety of music and talent. Coyote Grace is made up of one part sultry femme Ingrid Elizabeth and one part hunky trans man Joe Stevens. The band's profound lyrics and sharp, witty banter serve them well as an opening band for the Indigo Girls. The In the Know Band with Kristen Van Dyke is a progressive folk band that creates a different kind of sound with Kristen's jazzy folk stylings. The Baton Bluebirds is a blues band with a drive and energy that will knock you off your feet with a touch of Janis Joplin thrown in just for good measure. Joshua Klipp is a talented trans man and jazz vocalist who has hits on Billboard charts and videos on MTV's Logo Channel. Joshua has toured internationally and has been featured on The Tyra Banks Show. Sisters of the Pit will delight with their delicious, electric, fun music. Inspired by Jimi Hendrix, Sade, and Aretha Franklin, this trio recently shared the stage with Iggy Pop. Ananta is an alternative ambient electric violinist, cellist, beat mistress, and hula hooper extraordinaire who blasts her audience with spellbounding talent. Her song list includes soul, jazz, hip-hop, classic Middle Eastern, and trance. Ethel Merman, as channeled by Mark Sargent, is a San Francisco entertainment legend, famous for appearances at the Tranny Shack and Café du Nord. Wherever she goes, Ethel's big hair and big voice belting out the big hits is an audience pleaser for sure. The Deadleaves is an instrumental surf band and are famous as the house band for Creepy Coffee Movie Time and Six Flags Discovery Kingdom in Vallejo. The Deadleaves were recently featured on The Rachel Ray Show. And finally, comedian Simone Campbell is an exciting, energetic entertainer with a killer smile. Simone was recognized by the San Francisco Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence for her contributions to the LGBT community. And this all takes place on Sunday, June 5th from 11 a.m. until 6 p.m. on the shores of the Russian River at the Guerneville Lodge. If you have an event you'd like to share with our listeners, be sure and tell us about it by going to our own website at outbeatradio.com. Just click on Outbeat News. For Gary Carnevale, I'm Greg Moralia. Now back to Outbeat Now, right here on KRCB FM Santa Rosa.
This is NBC Nightly News with John Chancellor in New York.
Good evening. George Moscone, the mayor of San Francisco, was shot dead in his office in City Hall this morning. So was Harvey Milk, a city supervisor. Both shot, both murdered. The police arrested Dan White, a one-time city supervisor who had resigned and wanted Moscone to reappoint him, but he had not agreed to do so. Here's Rick Davis in San Francisco.
This single bouquet of flowers was on the steps of City Hall. It was placed under the mayor's window just a few moments after the death of Mayor George Moscone. The flags were at half-staff moments later as the city learned that the mayor and supervisor Harvey Milk had been murdered.
When word of the deaths first came down, first thoughts were of the People's Temple story. Reports that there was an assassination squad with a hit list naming city politicians. But it was not that. It was city politics gone mad.
Witnesses say after killing the mayor, White ran down the hall and fired three shots at Milk, killing him. Milk had opposed the reappointment of White. In the total confusion after the shooting, the president of the Board of Supervisors, Dianne Feinstein, spoke.
Both Mayor Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk have been shot and killed. The suspect is Supervisor Dan White.
A few moments later, Dan White surrendered to the police. This is a stunned city. There are those who spoke of the charm and youthful ability of Dan White. There were many who thought someday he could have been mayor of this city. Rick Davis, NBC News, San Francisco.
You know, Greg, in doing research for this show and listening to all of Harvey's speeches and learning all about Harvey, I certainly had thoughts of what the world might be like today if Harvey was still around. You know, I was not born, of course, during the time when Harvey was in power and at his peak in San Francisco. And I certainly wish I could have been old enough in those years to have experienced that and seen the gay liberation that was caused by him being supervisor. You know, if I had been a teenager in those years, he may have just changed my life and encouraged me to come out a lot sooner than I did. So I just have to honor him and say that I really miss him, even though I never knew him.
Well, I know just what you mean, Jeff. I was in high school at the time that he was shot and killed. And as I listen back now at some of his speeches, this one coming up in particular, it really reminds me about what Harvey was all about, and that was giving people hope.
Somewhere in Des Moines or San Antonio, there's a young gay person who all of a sudden realizes that she or he is gay, knows that if the parents find out, they'll be tossed out of the house. The classmates would taunt the child, and the Anita Bryans and John Briggs are doing their bit on TV, and that child had several options, staying in a closet, suicide, and then one day that child might open a paper and it says homosexual elected in San Francisco, and there are two new options. The option is to go to California. Stay in San Antonio and fight. 2 days after I was elected, I got a phone call. The voice was quite young. It was from Altoona, Pennsylvania. And the person said, thanks. And you've got to let gay people so that that young child and the thousands and thousands of life of that child know that there's hope for a better world. There's hope for a better tomorrow. Without hope, the only gays, but those blacks, the Asians, the disabled, the seniors, the usses, without hope, the usses give up. I know that you cannot live on hope alone, but without it, life is not worth living. And you got to give them hope. Thank you.
Next up on our show this evening, we're going to feature the speech given by Senator Mark Leno before the California State Senate on February 27, 2009. Back in 2008, then Assemblymember Mark Leno introduced the same legislation, which passed the Senate, and was vetoed by the governor on September 30, 2008. Mark didn't let that stop him. He reintroduced the bill on February 27, 2009. Subsequently, it passed the Assembly 45-27 and passed the Senate 25-12 and was signed into law by the governor on October 11, 2009. This is what he had to say.
SB 572 would do one very simple thing, and one very simple thing only. It would require that the governor, every May 22nd, declare Harvey Milk Day here in California. This is not a state holiday, does not afford state workers a time off, does not cost the state of California one penny. It's otherwise known as a day of special significance. We have days of special significance for any number of historical characters, including John Muir. We have a day of special significance for the California poppy. We have a day of special significance for adoptive parents. This also requires and mandates absolutely nothing of any classroom or any school district, nothing whatsoever. What it does do is memorializes the hope that the life of Harvey Milk has represented to so many people these 30 years now since his assassination. And it seeks to educate Californians about a true American hero. And let me tell you why we believe Harvey Milk to be a true American hero. He served in public office and lived and died by his convictions that all men and women are created equal, that liberty and justice for all are not just words that we repeat at the beginning of every session, but a philosophy worth fighting for. As you know, he moved to San Francisco in 1972. And I just want to give you a little bit of historical context as to what the world looked like, or at least the state of California looked like in 1972. It gives you a sense of the kind of courage it took for an individual such as Harvey Milk to live his life honestly and be in public office. So 1972 was the year before the American Psychiatric Association removed from its list of mental illnesses homosexuality. So to declare publicly of one such sexual orientation was to say, put me on your list, I have a mental illness. It was also a time in California when consensual acts by adults of the same gender were illegal. So it was also to announce publicly that one was an outlaw. And of course, we didn't amend our Fair Employment and Housing Act until 1999, which now makes it illegal to discriminate against someone just for being who they are in employment and housing. So these are not small things. We've changed the world significantly, and much of it done here in this legislature. But in 1972, when Harvey Milk got to San Francisco, it was a very different day. This took enormous courage. And he literally gave his life in public office so that people like Senator Kehoe and I can be here today. And that's not an exaggeration. He received death threats regularly and actually left a recorded message of his own voice that said, if a bullet should ever enter my brain, let it shatter every closet door. And of course, that's exactly how he died, with a bullet to the brain at short range by a fellow colleague because of who Harvey Milk was. Now, I would suggest all of us here are greatly indebted to Harvey Milk, because it was Harvey Milk who stood up to a state senator by the name of John Briggs, who had this amazing idea that we would fire every California teacher, K through university, if he or she were gay or lesbian. But John Briggs didn't stop there. If any teacher spoke in support of an openly gay or lesbian colleague, that person would be fired from the educational system of California as well. Harvey Milk stood up to John Briggs. Now, the polling showed that Prop 6, the Briggs Initiative, was going to pass by 65%. The Anita Bryants of the world were on a roll. They had had a success at the ballot in Florida, then another success in Kansas. Then they came to California, and this was the big prize. Polls showed that fervor was rising against anyone who dared to come out of the closet. But Harvey Milk stood up and debated John Briggs up and down the state of California, went into Orange County, went into very red parts of the state to debate John Briggs and to make his story real. It took enormous courage. If a bullet should ever enter my brain, let it shatter every closet door. And because of Harvey's courage, the tide began to turn. And soon, former Governor Ronald Reagan came out against Proposition 6, and Governor Jerry Brown came out against Proposition 6, and President Jimmy Carter spoke publicly against Prop 6, and it was soundly defeated. Imagine what would have happened to this state if John Briggs had had his way with us. We are indebted to Harvey Milk for that. So again, this costs the state nothing, but what does it cost us if we don't do this? How many more children need to be bullied or even killed in their own schools? There was an effeminate 14-year-old boy shot dead in his classroom by a fellow classmate just a year ago because students don't know what this is about, all these inner feelings and emotions and experience of their adolescent growth. When negative messages are put into their minds and there are no counter messages, crazy things happen, deadly things happen. So I think we take a great step forward. And as I said, a lot of the progress we've made has been made here under this dome. Issues that seemed very revolutionary, if not radical at the time, creating a domestic partner registry, affording same-sex couples hospital visitation rights, wildly debated on these floors. They seem rather quaint today. George W. Bush has wholly embraced domestic partnerships and civil unions. 70% of Californians support equal protection under the law for same-sex couples, whether you call them civil marriage, civil unions, domestic partnerships, or marriages. 70%. So here we are today, irrespective of party affiliation. I ask you to join me in voting aye on SB 572.
And of course, as a result of Senator Leno's legislation, May 22nd is now Harvey Milk Day in California. And one of the greatest ways to find out something about Harvey Milk and learn more about the 1970s and the early gay rights movement is to go visit the GLBT Museum in San Francisco. It's right on 18th Street, right up from Castro. It's an amazing museum, and earlier this month I had a chance to sit down at Harvey Milk's kitchen table with the executive director of the museum, Paul Boneberg, and here's what he had to say. Paul, welcome to Outbeat Now.
Glad to be here, Greg.
Well, this is a great place to start an exploration of Harvey Milk and Harvey Milk Day, and that's coming up, of course, next month. So tell us what you have here in the museum and how people can learn about Harvey Milk.
Well, the Historical Society has in our archive a large collection of materials related to Harvey Milk. Particularly, we have Harvey and Scott's personal effects. After Harvey was assassinated in 1978, his former partner and his heir, Scott Smith, kept all his belongings, and he kept them for 15 years. He knew the importance of Harvey, and he maintained many, many things. Scott died in the 90s of HIV/AIDS, as did many people who were around Harvey. And at that time, the items came to us. So we have many, many boxes of items, and we also have large items. Here at the museum right now, we're sitting next to Harvey and Scott's kitchen table, which we have here because it was a famous prop in the film Milk that Gus Van Sant made. You see in the film Sean Penn as Harvey Milk sitting at a round table taping his memoirs, basically. And the table they use as the prop is a replica of Harvey and Scott's actual kitchen table. So we're here sitting next to Harvey and Scott's actual kitchen table. And in a secure case is items you might have seen if you had been in their apartment in 1978. Harvey's jeans and his Harvey for Supervisor t-shirt and his bullhorn, Scott's coffee cup and sunglasses. And what we're trying to say is, yeah, Harvey Milk was an icon and a hero, an American hero, but he was also an average person who lived on Castro Street with his partner, and here's some things of theirs.
I know my first visit here, one of the things I saw immediately was that bullhorn. Harvey was famous for using the bullhorn. It seemed like that was his way of getting his word out. You saw several scenes in the Milk film with Harvey at Market and Castro with the big crowd around him and the bullhorn. So that one really stuck out for me as a really important piece of history.
Yeah, the bullhorn was lent to us by Cleve Jones, who Harvey had given it to, and you actually see him giving it to him in the movie, which is kind of remarkable. And we thought it was, Cleve wanted it on display in the Castro, and we thought it was important to be on display. And it's a perfect example also of how items come to us. People save things. They realize it's important. And so Scott saved one set of things. Cleve was saving other things. And so they're preserved now for history. But yeah, it's the actual bullhorn that Harvey actually used at the rallies and demonstrations as he was fighting back the far right and the John Briggs Initiative in 1978.
Now, we were talking earlier, and you told me that you were here in the Castro in 1978. I was 14 years old, a freshman in high school at the time. You were in college, as I think you said. Give us a feel for what it was like. What was the atmosphere? What was it like to actually hear Harvey speak?
Well, the film, Milk, Sean does a wonderful job actually recreating Harvey. It was eerie. He is using Harvey's exact words at the exact locations. To my recollection, quite a bit as Harvey was. Now, remember, I'm a college kid and I'm in a crowd of thousands of people, and Harvey's the most important, gay leader in the nation. So I'm sort of in awe of this fellow given this speech. But I guess the one thing I would say to viewers is the GLBT community was under attack. There was a ballot initiative that had swept the nation to fire all teachers for being gay. They had passed in Miami, and they had passed in Minneapolis, and they had passed in other cities around the country. They had come to California to try to basically, fire anybody who was a GLBT teacher, or anybody even said that GLBT teachers were okay. And when we began the campaign against it, it was one-third for the initiative, one-third against the initiative, and one-third didn't know. And there was every reason to believe we would lose. They had won every ballot before. And so the community was under attack, and Harvey was the only, there is no big gay infrastructure, no gay organizations as we know it, so maybe 10 or 20 people in the whole nation who are being paid to work on gay issues. So there's almost no elected officials, only a couple. And so Harvey moves forward as a part-time San Francisco supervisor at this period with these little volunteer groups and tries to defeat the initiative and wins, and then is 3 weeks later assassinated.
From your perspective, from what you remember, what was the real power? Was it because he was the first outspoken and out gay male person elected to public office, or what about him drew so many people to listen?
Well, he certainly was a charismatic campaigner and a charismatic leader. He was a combination both a strong presence and very accessible. So you could meet Harvey on the street, and he'd be wearing probably the jeans we have here on display, and he was this sort of a guy around town. And then he could also transform into a speaker who was delivering a message. But also, remember, Harvey's strategy is, powerful as well. For among things, he was a street organizer, but he was also a Democrat. He was in the Democratic Party. So he basically said to the queer community, sort of join the system, register to vote, you got to turn out and vote, and we should hold elected office, and I'll run for supervisor, and did. He argued that press was important, that people should be, that the community should be visible, and we should have press. Probably the most important thing that Harvey's message, you see it in the movie, and it's of that time, is that people should come out. That people should not be in the closet, come out. And Harvey's famous line, I'm Harvey Milk and I'm here to recruit you. He's basically saying to people, come out. And now youth and other people sort of take it for granted that it's okay to be gay and it's okay to be out. But that wasn't the case then. It was not the case in the 70s that people were all out into their public, to their family, and so on. So, I mean, one, he was charismatic and yes, a star personality. He also had strategies and ideas that were important and changed the movement.
You know, I read about a piece of legislation going through now that proposes to include GLBT history for young people. And I would imagine that at the time, Harvey really was a remarkable person for people to see because there was no other role model. There was nothing in history books about other accomplishments, other role models in the LGBT community, because it was largely hidden. What do you hope history books will capture about 1978 and 1979 and sort of the birth of the Castro and the gay rights movement? What are some of the important things young people should know?
Well, I think I would actually hope for a broader message, which is that there have always been gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender people in American history. They're always there, and they've played many, many roles. They come from all sorts of diverse communities, and in San Francisco particularly, is a very long movement. Many people don't know that the first person to actually run for public office as an openly gay person was Jose Saria, a native San Franciscan who ran in 1961 and got 5,000 votes. And that the first lesbian organization in America, for example, the Daughters of Belitis, is founded in San Francisco by Phyllis Lyon and Del Martin. And Phyllis Lyon and Del Martin go on, they found the Daughters of Belitis in the early 1950s, and they go on through to become the first gay couple married legally in the state of California. So you can see in the arc of one lifetime, from the 50s through 2000, through the 2000s, sort of the history of the queer movement. So I think there's a great deal of history to be told, and Harvey is sort of a portal, a window into a vast history of a community, of an extraordinary American community that has done what Americans always do, which is, fight for equality, take care of themselves, invent their culture, and try to, make a contribution to the public good.
Right, and that's an important thing for us to hold on to and to record and to remember, and also for young people to come and visit and see. And there certainly is a lot more here in the museum beyond the Harvey Milk period. Tell us what else people might see here when they come to visit.
Well, maybe just a couple of examples. There's two exhibits up now. One is the Great Collections from the Archive, which takes eight different collections, film and poster and ephemera and photographs, and shows people what's in our archive. The Historical Society has one of the largest archives of queer historic materials in the world. The larger exhibit is our vast queer past, and that tells 25 different themes within queer history and many different stories, very diverse. To give you an example of one, it's sort of an amazing archive. We have a story of a fellow named Hiro Unama. Hiro was born in Japan, came to the United States in the teens, and basically you see him as a gay bachelor, very, of course, closeted in the Japanese-American community in San Francisco in the 1930s, a photo of he and his friends on our wall. Going through his collection, we discovered, the historians discovered, a photograph of a hero and two friends at one of the Japanese internment camps in the 1940s. It's at the Topaz Camp. We believe it's the only known example of a photograph of someone known to be gay at the Japanese-American internment camps. Hero goes on after the war. He obviously loves America, becomes an American citizen, and actually has some things classic of that period, subscribing to physique magazines and doing things that you would expect of normal, you know, of gay men of the 1940s and the 1950s. But it's an example of, this is our story as much as any of our, you know, our stories are very diverse, our community is very diverse, and that's sort of an example of one. You also see things about protest and about business, and we have, I mentioned Phyllis and Dell, we have their wedding outfits here, the outfits they were wearing. Dell died shortly after their second wedding, but Phyllis is still alive, and Phyllis actually came to the opening of the museum and was here with the wedding outfits. So it is... you know, it's a broad sweep, a kaleidoscope, if you will, of queer history.
And it's a perfect opportunity in the month of May to honor Harvey Milk and Harvey Milk Day to come down to the Castro, check out Harvey's camera shop, which is just up the street on Castro. You can see his apartment, which is right above the camera shop. And if you don't know, that's where the new HRC store is located. And then just go down the block, make a left, and walk up to the GLBT Museum. What are your hours, and what is the cost to get in?
Well, Harvey's Camera Shop is 575 Castro Street, and it's, as you mentioned, one block away. Our hours are Wednesday through Saturday, 11 to 7, Sunday, noon to 5, and it's a $5 admission to get in. We do have a discount for student groups and tours, so if there's any students listening or GSAs or teachers listening that would like to come bring a tour through, we do have a discount, and we can usually arrange docents to come through and actually do a tour of the museum as well.
Excellent. And do you have a website that people can go to for more information?
We do. It's glbthistory.org. So if you go to glbthistory.org, it'll tell you all about the society, the archives, and the museum.
Great, and we'll definitely have that on the Outbeat Radio website at outbeatradio.com. Well, we've been talking with Paul Boenberg, who is the Executive Director of the GLBT Historical Society. Thank you so much for having us here to the museum and showing us some of the exhibits and spending some time around Harvey Milk's table.
Thanks, Greg. It's my pleasure.
And we'll be right back after this music break.
It doesn't matter if you love him or capital H-I-M-M-M. Just put your paws up, 'cause you were born this way, baby.
My mama told me when I was young, we're all on superstars. She rolled my hair, put my lipstick on, in a glass of her boudoir. There's nothing wrong with loving who you are, she said, 'cause he made you perfect, babe. So hold your head up, girl, and you'll go far. Just be a queen. Don't be a drag, just be a queen. Don't be a drag, just be a queen. Give yourself prudence and love your friends, so we can rejoice the truth. In the religion of the insecure, I must be myself, respect my youth. A different law is not a sin. Believe capital H.
Love you. Don't be a drag, just be a queen. Whether you're broke or evergreen, you're black, white, beige, Chola descent, you're Lebanese, you're Orient. Whether life's disabilities left you outcast but leader teased, rejoice and love yourself today, cause baby, you were born this way.
No matter gay, straight or bi, lesbian, transgender life, I'm on the right track, baby, I was born to survive. No matter black, white, or beige, Chola or Orient me,
You're listening to Outbeat Now on KRCB-FM Santa Rosa. That was Lady Gaga with her new hit, Born This Way. It's time now for the Outbeat Youth segment. And welcome to this month's edition of Outbeat Youth. I'm Greg Moralia. Outbeat Youth is a segment for and about LGBT youth in the North Bay and beyond. We're here every month as part of Outbeat Now. Our first guest tonight is Mark Snyder, who is the communications director of Collage, an organization that supports children of LGBT parents. Well, Mark, welcome to Outbeat Youth.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Why don't you start by telling us a little bit about yourself, where you live, and what you do?
I'm 27 years old, and I live in San Francisco with my partner, and I work at Collage. And Collage is the only national network of youth-driven network of people with a lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, or queer parent.
Now, I first heard about you and the Collage organization after watching a Channel 7 interview with you that was about LGBT families and bullying and so forth. And I was particularly drawn to your coming out story and how you all got involved in Collage. So let's start with that. Why don't you tell us about how you came out and how it all went for you?
Sure. My name is Mark Snyder, and I grew up in Snyder County, Pennsylvania. And I went to West Snyder High School.
Wow.
So it was extremely rural. The moral of that story is that it was very rural and very isolating, being kind of gender non-conforming and being gay. I certainly didn't have the language back then to identify as queer or genderqueer, but now I have that language. And so growing up was, difficult in school in particular, but also in the community. We lived in a very rural, politically conservative community. So there was a lot of messages of homophobia all around me in my hometown and in the culture there. And beginning in the seventh grade, it's really when high school began and when school became extremely challenging. I remember, the first day of seventh grade, the kids started calling me sissy and faggot and a whole host of other things.
Uh-huh.
And it just progressively got worse and worse, and it seemed like everything I tried didn't work. I would fight back with violence, and that would send me to the principal's office. So I had detention for fighting back sometimes, and I would ignore it, and I would, stay home from school. I pretended I was sick often, and my parents got letters every year saying that if I missed any more days, then legal action would be taken. The violence really escalated in school as well. I was choked, so I had bruises all around my neck once, and my parents had to go into the school. The teachers and the administrators at my school were completely unprepared to deal with issues of harassment based on on perceived sexual orientation. Some of them recommended that I, toughen up. Some of them recommended that I actually fight back privately. Some of them recommended that I call the police, which I did, and did not find support there either. By ninth grade, I became suicidal. My friends had kind of abandoned me because it wasn't fun to be around the person that was always getting made fun of and to be associated with that person. And it felt like the whole school was making fun of me, even though they weren't, but it was such a large number of people, it was impossible to isolate just one bully or just a couple bullies, to deal with the problem. It was really a school-wide and a cultural problem that still exists in that area and in that school. So I became suicidal, in ninth grade, and I remember, that day very clearly when I rode the bus home, and I was the last one off the bus, the first one on in the morning and the last one off at night because we lived so far away from the school. And we lived on a mountain, and I had to walk up the hill that day. I call it the hill because my dad forgot to pick me up at the bus. And I walked up the hill to my house and kind of just in a daze walked into my home and went up to my parents' bedroom, and I knew right where my dad kept his gun. And I went to the closet where he kept it and got it out, loaded it, and I held it to my head for a while.
But, wow.
I didn't do it. I chickened out. It was really what happened. I just chickened out. I couldn't do it. So, a couple weeks later, I told my parents that I wanted to quit school as soon as I turned 16. And, of course, they were against that. They were always very supportive in terms of academics. And so then I applied to go to college a year early. And that's really when my life started to change. The path of my life really changed for the better. I was accepted to Emerson College in Boston, and they allowed me to complete high school during my senior year and do my first year of college at the same time. I actually went to college when I was 17, and I hadn't even graduated high school yet, but they let me figure that out. And so it all just really came together that year when I was 17, and I moved to Boston, and boy, that was a big change from a mountain in the middle of rural Pennsylvania to the big city.
So I understand also that after you came out, your dad also came out. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, I think it's been 2 years now. One night, my dad went missing, and it was the worst 3 days of my life because he was missing and we couldn't figure it out. And I thought maybe it was a car accident or, in the back of my head, something about being gay. I already started to have this feeling. And sure enough, he was arrested for paying for sex with other men.
Now, was the fact that your dad came out a big surprise to you, or were there signs that you picked up beforehand?
I had feelings and I had clues growing up that my dad was gay, too. So it was not a big surprise to me that he was gay. In the long run, I'm glad that now, at least hopefully now, he'll be able to live more openly. And he's still kind of slowly coming out through letters to me. It was really cute. This week, actually, he sent me a letter saying that he saw his first episode of Glee and his first episode of Desperate Housewives.
Oh, that's so great to hear. Let's shift gears a little bit. You work for an organization called Collage. Tell us about it.
Collage has actually existed for 20 years. And it's it's still the only national organization of people with LGBTQ parents. We really find that when people who have LGBT parents connect with each other, they become stronger advocates for themselves and their families. And it can be really isolating just having an LGBT parent. Some areas of the country, you really are the only one in quite a ways with an LGBT parent. So we also have like big events and conferences and leadership trainings, and we do advocacy. We mobilize our young people, especially to lobby their senators for LGBT rights, especially those that help families. We had some families really fighting for the adoption ban to be lifted in Florida. And of course, we have families advocating for marriage and hospital visitation rights, all those things that are important for families.
So how did you get involved with Collage? What attracted you to this kind of work?
It's ironic. I actually worked at Our Family Coalition, which is a Bay Area organization for LGBT parents. And then I saw this job for communications here at Collage, and it was right up my alley of stuff I like to do. And right at about the time I was applying for the job is when my dad came out as gay. So it was just a perfect move, you know, career move. And I was able to kind of get a little support and find the community for that part of my identity now of having a gay parent.
Wow, that's just so amazing. So as a national organization, are there offices all over the country?
We just have an office in San Francisco, but we have chapters around the country. We have a very active chapter in New York City, and we just had a retreat there where one of the senators from New Jersey, Senator Lesniak, came and spoke, and there was all kinds of, you know, activities, and we help people learn how to share their stories, share their family stories. We make videos of people sharing their family stories, and we put those online.
Oh, good. Okay. So tell us what your hope for Collage is in the future.
Well, in the near future, we're launching a new website, so that'll be collage.org, and it's going to have lots of multimedia for people to share their stories, and you can watch videos and share a lot of resources on there. So I'm excited about that. I've been working really hard on it. And we're also launching an online timeline. It's like an interactive timeline that showcases LGBTQ family history over the past 20 years, and it's really cool. But, you know, I view Collage as growing nationally, and I know that we have a plan in place to do it, and I think we will. We'll strengthen our chapters in local communities, and we'll have more chapters, and just be able to reach more people who are feeling isolated. So that's really where I view our strength, is when we have a strong presence in a local community and when young people are taking action in their local areas.
Well, it sounds like you've got quite a future ahead of you, Mark, and it's just really, really great work. And if you'd like to learn more about Collage, you can go to their new website at www.collage.org. We've been talking with Mark Snyder, who's the communications coordinator for Collage. Mark, thanks so much for being with us tonight on Outbeat Youth.
Thank you. It's been a great time. Thank you.
Hi, my name's Deacon.
Hi, my name is Randy.
And my name's Zari, and we're peer counselors at Positive Images.
Positive Images is a member-driven organization that provides support and advocacy to LGBTQI youth and young adults.
We would also like to invite you to come with us and meet with us on Thursday nights from 7 to 9 p.m. at Santa Rosa High School.
If you want to learn more, please call us at 707-568-5830. Also, you can go to our website at www.pauseimages.org.
You know, these days, many high schools have gay-straight alliances and have become more supportive of LGBT students than ever before. But within the high school athletics department, homophobia can still be a big problem. Well, our next guest has done something to help gay high school athletes. Brad Usselman and two friends he met online have created a national blog just for gay high school athletes. Well, Brad, welcome to Outbeat Youth.
Thank you for having me today.
Well, why don't you start by telling us a little bit about you, where you live and where you go to school.
I live up in Vancouver, Washington, and I go to a high school called Sky High School. I am a gay athlete, and I run cross country and track, and I'm not openly gay yet. I will be soon, though.
Oh, really? So what year are you at the high school?
I'm a sophomore.
Sophomore. And when did you first sort of discover that you were gay?
I first realized it in about late elementary school.
Wow, okay. So you haven't actually come out yet?
Most of my friends know, my family know, but it's not public yet.
Okay, all right.
It's more just something people know.
Okay, so, you know, our listeners always love to hear the coming out stories of our guests. So tell us how you told your parents.
I told my parents through a letter that I set on their bed, and then I just went, I was cat sitting, so I went over to my friend's house to go cat sit, and they read the letter and came over.
And how old were you when you did that?
I just did that about a month ago.
Wow. Well, congratulations to you. What was their reaction?
It was all positive. They were all fine with it. It was all good.
Good for you. How about your friends?
None of my friends have cared at all. It's been all good.
Very good.
And then my friends have told my other friends, so I haven't really had to tell many people.
Okay. Well, yeah, I guess word gets around, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Now, do you have a gay-straight alliance at your school?
We do, but I'm not a member of it.
Okay. And so you said that you're planning maybe to come out formally at some time in the near future?
We have a big, huge anti-bullying week that my student government is putting on, and I'm one of the people heading it. And we have a video being shown, and I'm in the video.
Wow. So you're going to come out to your whole school on video.
That's pretty amazing, and certainly takes a lot of guts. How do you think your classmates or your colleagues are going to react?
I'm guessing people will react positively. If they don't react positively, I don't think that people are going to say anything to me. But other than that, I'm pretty sure I'll, because most of my friends know already. My lunch table knows. It'll be interesting for me as well.
I'm
to see how it turns out.
I'm sure. Are you nervous about that?
I'm a little nervous about it. Just to go from having no one really know to having the whole entire school know.
So you mentioned that you run cross country and track. Have you told any of your fellow athletes?
I'm pretty sure this other kid in my grade knows, but other than, I know a bunch of the girls on the girls cross country team know, but not other than that, no.
Okay. And what, you know, tell us about this organization that you've put together and what it's all about and how the idea came about.
I started a blog at bradrobertben.wordpress.com, and basically it is where we just blog about our lives as being gay athletes in high school. We're all varsity athletes. They play soccer, and I do cross country and track. And we basically just talk about how it is being a gay athlete and how it's affected our lives, as well as some fun stories that we have, and just go from there. We're trying to create a opening and creative, not creative, a more open community where people from all over the country that are gay athletes, as well as just regular LGBT people, can come and feel comfortable.
Now, the two other guys that you created this blog with, they're not at your school, right? How did you find them?
No, they live in, one lives in Tennessee and one lives in Georgia. And we found each other through a website called thegyc.com.
And so you just met there and sort of talked about the idea that there isn't anything for other gay athletes to connect?
Well, we've been talking since about June of the summer of 2010, and we've always texted back and forth and everything. We've always Skyped each other. And then in December, I came up with this idea one day when I was running on the treadmill, and I asked them about it, and they all seemed all for it. And it's just gone from there.
So who else have you been able to meet through this blog?
We've had Gareth Thomas send us a video one day. And I met a few other gay teens, as well as many people from the older generations that are really excited for us and really find us to be true role models.
And what other kind of sports are the other young people that you've met involved in?
The ones that I've met specifically, I've met some people in swimming, lacrosse, track and field, tennis people, and some karate people.
Amazing. And where are they from, generally?
They're from all over, no specific area.
Have they been?
We've even had a few foreign exchange students email us.
Really? From what countries?
I think we had one guy from Italy.
Nice.
Email us.
And have they had? What's their experience been? Has it been similar to yours, where they feel sort of isolated at their school, or?
From the ones I've talked to, they've all felt like they're kind of the only person in their area that goes through the same thing, which is really the reason why we're trying to start the blog, is for a community for them. But everyone that I've talked to has gone through a really great process, and it's all been very positive for them.
So tell me about what people can do on the blog.
People can email us, they can comment, they can email us their stories, and we have been posting some people's stories lately on the blog. We're trying to start a community, and for that we have to have people comment and start talking and just go from there.
Where do you think gay athletes exist? What sports, let's say at an average high school, do you think gay athletes exist most?
Gay athletes must be everywhere. There's not just one sport that gay athletes are in.
And are you going to be surprised if you have someone from the football team at your school or at another school contact you?
I'm actually kind of interested to see if that will happen.
Yeah, I would be too, and I totally agree with you. I think there are gay athletes everywhere. It's just so unstereotypical, and you know, there's so much homophobia that still exists in that whole arena that it's tough. I mean, look at the professional sports world.
Yeah.
So where do you see your website going? What are your hopes for it in the future?
We hope our website grows as much as possible and just for it to be fun and a great place for people to go to, as well as a place that high school counselors and people can suggest to other LGBT teens that may be going through a hard time can go there and just see that, you know, being gay is okay and you can live a perfect life and live a happy life while being gay. And I hope people can see that through the website.
Yeah, and while being a very successful athlete in school, I mean, you can have both, right?
Yes, you can have both.
Great.
And we want people to see that.
So how about you? What are your plans for after graduation?
After graduation, I really am hoping I can run in college and go East Coast soon or L.A. and start living my life.
Yeah, yeah. So you intend to continue to pursue your sport?
I intend to continue to do my sport in college. It's one of my main drives to do.
So what advice can you give our listeners out there who may be involved in a team sport at their own high school right now and are really struggling with coming out?
I hope that they realize that people are accepting out there, even though they may not seem it. And just, they can come to our website and they can talk to us, and they just need to know that there's people out there who will help them and will help them get where they want to go.
So tell us your website one more time where people can find your blog.
BradRobertBen.wordpress.com.
Great. And if you missed that, we will definitely post that on the Outbeat Youth website. We've been talking with Brad Hustleman, who is a sophomore from Washington, who's in the process of coming out. He is a gay athlete in high school and a definite role model for everyone. Brad, thanks so much for being with us on Outbeat Youth.
Thank you for having me. So
alive. Are you a writer, a poet, or musician? Let the world hear your voice on a special Outbeat Youth talent show broadcasting live right here on KRCB Radio on the last Sunday of May. Read your poetry, short essay, or perform your music. Let Sonoma County and the rest of the world hear what you've got to say. We're looking for LGBT youth under 25 years of age to feature on this show. For more information, go to outbeatyouth.com and click on Talent Show at the top of the page.
Well, that wraps up this month's edition of Outbeat Youth. I'd like to thank Mark Snyder and Brad Usselman for being with us tonight and for sharing their stories. And you can listen to the full unedited version of these interviews online at outbeatyouth.com. Just click on show notes at the top of the page. Remember, you can follow us all month long on Facebook, MySpace, Twitter, and of course on our own website at outbeatyouth.com. And you can listen and download past shows on iTunes. And that brings us to the end of our show tonight. Tune in to Outbeat Radio next Sunday for Living Proof with Sheridan Gold and Dr. Diana Grayer. And Jeff and I will be back next month on the fourth Sunday of May with all you need to know about Sonoma County Pride. We'll be joined by some of the religious leaders who will be participating in this year's interfaith service. And on Outbeat Youth, we'll be celebrating Mother's Day by talking with Marsha Izumi and her unconditional love for her transgender son. Have a great week, everyone. I'm not afraid to be.